Truth Revolution.
It's Jesus World, and you're just living in it. We're doing a radio show here. It's called Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason meet. I'm Pastor Dave. That's Pastor Jeff. Or that's Pastor Jeff. I'm Pastor Dave. Whichever way you want to say it.
That's the best intro you've ever done.
Are we live?
This is, yeah.
Are we rolling?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's recorded. I said it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to do that while it was recorded because it might make you happy or something. Well, I don't know.
No, that was really good, man. Let's do it like that more often.
Right.
This is Jesus World. You're just living it.
Right.
All right. So anyway, we got a very special show today.
Yeah.
This, you know what? Next week is Christmas Eve, and we're going to have some Christmas services.
Yeah.
We're going to have four of them, actually.
Yep. What time are they?
You're asking me?
I'm grilling you.
Like, I don't know. 10 a.m., 11:30 a.m., 5:30 p.m., 7 p.m. I'm going to say that again because I said it too fast for Dave. 10 a.m., 11:30 a.m. in the morning. You can also come in the evening if you sleep in, 5:30 p.m. or 7 p.m.
Yeah, I got really excited because it looked like you were kind of stalling for time when you, as you're like, I don't know him. Yeah, you knew him.
I know him. All right. Anyway, we got a special show today.
Yeah.
So, Dave, what's going on?
Well, we got a special guest today. He graduated summa cum laude from Talbot Theological Seminary.
Great school.
With a double master's degree in theology and philosophy. He earned a PhD in apologetics and worldview studies from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He travels throughout the United States and abroad, speaking at camps, churches, schools, universities, and conferences. He has authored or edited over 18 books, including The Fate of the Apostles and A New Kind of Apologist. Don't miss his blog at seanmcdowell.org, as you may have figured out. Today, our guest is Sean McDowell.
Welcome, Sean. Great for you to be here.
Guys, thanks for having me on. This is fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, this is Dr. McDowell here, right? He's got a PhD. He has also written, this is the book we're talking about today, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. This is huge.
Yeah, I use that for weightlifting.
That's right. And this is, and you look, I mean, you look at it, the text is small. So, I mean, we're not talking about, this isn't, there's no pictures, Dave.
Oh.
I don't know if you want to read it or not then, but.
Yeah, I got to forgo that one then.
But
the cover's nice though.
This is an awesome book. This has been completely updated. You might have read an earlier version, but this has been completely updated. A life-changing truth for a skeptical world. This is the type of book that people read when they're going, you know, I don't know if Christianity is true or not.
Right.
And they read it and it changes their life.
Amen.
So, Sean, let me just ask the question. We're going to tackle one topic on here. We're going to talk about Christianity and all its sins and problems, something you tackle in this book. But before we even answer that, why'd you start to write this book?
Oh my goodness. My dad wrote that book in 1972 before I was born when he was a skeptic, really trying to disprove Christianity.
Yeah.
And he started speaking on the evidences there and people kept saying, you know, give me your notes. Where's your notes? He thought, well, I'll put notes, 20 pages front and back, sold out like crazy. And then he thought, you know what? I'm going to put this into a book. And the irony is no publisher wanted it.
Wow.
Really?
No publisher wanted that book. Now it's like 4 million in print.
Yeah.
And so that's been a part of his story. And I've grown up. I mean, even today, I can't go anywhere and speak or travel and somebody not say one of two things. Either that book helped them kind of save their faith when they were in college or they had doubts. Or second, that was something that God used to help them in their journey to faith. And so the last edition of that was in 1999. So it's dated. And as he started thinking about updating it, now I've got a PhD, done some work of my own. It kind of made perfect sense, father and son, to launch it for a new generation.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome.
That is great. Now, you have a PhD. Your dad didn't have a PhD when he wrote the original book.
He still doesn't have a PhD. That matters. I think he has 38 honorary doctors. Actually, he doesn't have that many, but he has a bunch. He's done so many PhD works over. But the reality is my dad is more of an evangelist than anything else. His heart is to reach the lost. So if apologetics helps reach the lost, great.
Amen.
I care about evangelism. I'm a teacher professor first who does apologetics. He's an evangelist first who does apologetics. So it was kind of neat to come together and find that blend.
That's right. And I got to point out, I'd be amiss if I didn't point out that you also teach at one of the greatest schools in the country, Biola University.
Here we go again.
It's great. I graduated from there with my master's.
You hear this every time.
So, but it really is a great school.
You're incorrigible.
Well, it is actually the number one ranked apologetics graduate program.
All right.
Hey,
let's find hear it from you.
Yeah.
Let's find to hear it from you, Sean. Now listen, Sean, it's fine to hear it from you, but you got to sit where I'm sitting. It's like every other month or something like that. It's like, oh, he just goes on and on about by Ola University. I'm sure it's a fine school. But
well, why don't you just join us and then you don't have to hear it anymore?
Oh, yeah. Like the Borg now. You can assimilate me. I see what it is.
All right. Well, let's get into our topic for today. All right. Can Christianity be trusted given all of its sins? This is a blog. All right. SeanMcDowell.org is his website. And he kind of adapted this from the book. You start out, you just say, in the world well knows the sins of the church, among them Inquisition, witch hunts, the Crusades, and modern day sexual abuse. Oof. I think that's probably really come to the forefront with all these sexual abuse scandals that are coming out right now. Fortunately, the church has kind of been spared. There hasn't been really big church problems in these latest ones, mostly in Hollywood and media. But this is a real issue for a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a big issue. In fact, I would put it this way. You go back a generation or two, and one of the first questions people asked was, is Christianity true? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that's the first question people ask, although evidence is for the truth and truth still matter. Even though we live in a post-truth world, all the emphasis on fake news tells us that people still care about truth.
All right.
The first question people are asked about Christianity is not, is Christianity true? They're asking, is Christianity good?
Mm.
That's the lens through which people are even approaching Christianity. So if you think Christianity creates intolerant bigots and it burned witches at the stake and caused the Inquisition and leads to intolerance, then of course you're not even going to entertain the positive case for it being true.
Right. Mm.
So it's more important than ever that we respond to the claim that Christianity is just caused all this dissension and bloodshed throughout the history of the world as a whole, and also to highlight a lot of the positive things that Christianity has contributed.
Now, you're not suggesting that Christianity hasn't done some really bad things.
Of course not. Now, first, I would make a distinction. When we say Christianity hasn't done things, Christianity is a name for a religion.
Right. Right.
So it's people who do good things and people who do bad things. So there's been a lot of people who've done bad things in the name of Christ. I mean, we cannot deny that. Now, of course, the first question we'd ask is, are they really Christians? Not to say that I'm not implying that somebody who is a Christian can't do a bad thing.
Right.
But even Jesus talked about separating the wheat and the tares. And he said there'd be a lot of people within the body of the church who call themselves Christians, who at the end of the day, he'll say, I never knew you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep what Augustine would talk about, the visible and the invisible church, in mind when we talk about these kinds of issues.
Now, there's something popped into my head here. I saw, actually, I think you posted this on Twitter. I don't know. It was probably a couple of years ago or something. The media had asked you to do an interview and then said, no, we can't have you on the news because your stance is too reasonable. You're too kind. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm really glad to know that my tweets from 2 years ago randomly pop into your head.
Yes.
Coming back to haunt.
That's kind of scary. I'll tell you what that was. That was about 2 years ago. That was right after the Obergefell versus Hodges Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage. Now, CNN called the Southern Baptists in Southern California. And they called the Southern Baptists because they wanted someone who's fiery and angry and they thought would say something just hateful. Mm-hmm. Southern Baptists called Rick Warren and they called me because they wanted somebody who wouldn't respond that way.
Right.
And they asked me, they're like, in an hour and a half, can you be on a panel in LA? I'm like, my wife's out with some friends. I'm babysitting the kids. There's zero chance. Well, then I'm about to hang up and the producer says, let me take your number. If there's an issue, maybe we'll have you call. And I said, sure. Well, I get a call shortly later, and it was dealing with a Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner coming out story. Mm-hmm. And they said, would you be willing to call in the middle of this CNN show? I said, actually, I was going to say no. And my son's in the car going, Dad, say yes. That's awesome. You'll be on TV. I'm like, okay, I'll do it for my son.
Nice.
And that's the true story of why I was going to do it. And I said, sure, I'll call in. And the producer says, well, can you tell me what your position is? I said, sure. I said, this transgender issue is really important. We get it right. Mm. There's a lot of people getting hurt. It's been politicized and lives are at stake. We need to take a sober, close look at the facts. And as a Christian, I also want you to know that Jesus loves transgender people.
Yeah.
Long pause. He goes, man, you're too nice. I can't have you on. My executive producer will get upset.
Jeez.
You know, it's funny because I was having a conversation with somebody via text about right around the same time. And they asked me what I thought about what our church's view of it was. And I told him basically kind of the same thing. And he's like, y'all are too nice. I'm like, what do you want?
Right.
You know?
Well, see, I think this kind of leads into the point that the reason this came to my mind is a lot of the world has this view of Christianity as not just individuals who've made flawed mistakes, but as a system that oppresses people. And so, so when we have these opportunities to speak about kindness and love to even people we disagree with, that's not necessarily the narrative that the world wants to offer.
Right.
Do you think that's a problem for us, or do you think that's not really the issue?
I think you're correct about that. The reality is people who call themselves Christians and Christians have done some bad things. Mm-hmm. And I'm the first one to raise my hand and admit it. Now, this shouldn't surprise us, especially when you take a biblical view of human nature and you read Romans 3 or Mark chapter 7. We shouldn't be surprised that human beings who are deeply flawed and sinful in nature do bad things.
Right.
That shouldn't surprise us at all. But on the flip side, I think the larger secular media has incentive to shame and silence and play up all the negative things the church has done to fit their narrative, especially the secular humanist narrative that I think CNN pushes. And frankly, their founder signed the Secular Humanist Manifesto.
I didn't know.
So we know that they're some of those ideas are coming through in CNN, and not just to pick on them. We see it in a lot of the rest of our secular culture as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the balance is Christians, we need to own up to the things that we've done wrong. Mm-hmm. And in that article you cited, that's one of the first things I say is, look, we need to stop pointing fingers. If we need to ask for repentance and own the things we've done wrong, let's own it. But we also have to recognize the good Christianity's done. We also have to separate when people do bad things from the system of Christianity and what Jesus actually teaches. And also, like you said, the agenda that I think so many people have and a narrative they want to paint about the church.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm going to say, time out. We've made some mistakes, but as a whole, the teachings of Jesus are the only ones that bring real freedom. And by far, the church has been much more of an institution for goodness than it has the kind of oppression that you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, we've even have people, and you've probably experienced the same thing. We've had people who would identify as homosexual or transgender come to our church, hear our teachings, and not one of them has walked away going, wow, you guys are really hateful and spiteful.
Right.
You know, they've all said, wow, you know, the way you handle this is really good. Now, when you put it on the national stage, it's different. But we have to deal with our own failings, like you said. We're going to talk about that. We're getting close to a break. But I want to deal with this sentence you said in the article. Christian behavior so deeply undermines the plausibility of the gospel in the minds of many people. That should be a wake-up call for Christians. I think we need to ask the question that you put in here, right? Have I failed to live what Jesus has taught me? If every Christian was thinking along those lines, we wouldn't be giving people an excuse to reject the gospel.
Well, I think that's where it begins. Rather than pointing fingers and blaming somebody else, which goes all the way back to the garden and is obviously common in our culture, humble ourselves a little bit and say, how have I fallen short? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons that we're often harsh and judgmental is because we're not in touch with our own shortcomings, our own failure. This is Matthew 18. The unmerciful servant couldn't show mercy to somebody else because he didn't realize how much he had been forgiven.
Right.
So if we as Christians recognize how much God has given us in terms of grace, our own shortcomings, then it just becomes a lot more easy and natural to show that kind of grace to other people.
Absolutely. We use a phrase at our church called untamed mercy, right? We just want people to know that the mercy we have for each other and from God is untamed, right? It's wild. It's passionate.
Right. Nothing should stop it.
Right. So when you say in your article, like you just said now, that human nature was made in God's image, but is profoundly fallen in sin, we can recognize that about each other. Maybe a listener today who's not really happy with a Christian in their life or with Christianity in general, maybe you can recognize that these are just fallen people trying to get through the world. And maybe some Christians who are judgmental maybe can realize, hey, everybody else is just fallen as well, just like you are. And and we should be humble too. We're going to come right back. We got to take a break. But we're going to come right back and keep talking with Dr. McDowell here, Sean McDowell, who wrote Evidence That Man's a Verdict with Josh McDowell, his dad. We're going to probe a little bit deeper into this. We're going to talk about some of the things Christianity has and hasn't done. and of course, Lancer Bible Contradiction. We'll be right back.
Revolution Church.
Have you ever thought, gee, I'd like to go to church, and I really wish someone would make me get out of bed early?
Not me. I like my sleep.
Just go with it. We're making an ad.
Okay. Yes, I have always wished someone would wake me up earlier.
Okay, I got lots of kids, so I'm already awake. New service time at Revolution Church, 8:30 a.m.
Cool, and for those of us who prefer beauty sleep, Revolution also has 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m.
Check out www.revo.church.
That's R-E-V-O.church.
Revo.church.
Do you love Truth Revolution?
Of course they do, Dave.
Well, if you do, or...
Or if you appreciate the fact that thousands of people are being taught that Christianity is compatible with science and logic.
Or if you simply love the fact that we hear from people often who say, this show changed my life, I love Jesus.
Then consider a donation.
You can visit truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church and donate.
We don't get paid from this show.
But it's our goal to give truth, give knowledge, give encouragement.
And your giving keeps all of our giving going.
Do you know, or are you, a woman between 18 and 22 aging out of foster care or without a place to live?
If your goal is to continue your education, whether it's a college degree or GED, the Hope House may be the place for you.
Located in Salina, Kansas, Hope House is a beautiful home, providing not only a place to live, but a place to grow.
As a program of the Ashby House, Hope House provides dedicated volunteers and staff members who are there to help you accomplish your goals.
If this sounds like it might be a place for you or someone you know, please visit hopehouseks.org.
That's hopehouseks.org. God cares more about the inside of a person than the outside.
So Revolution Church, we agree. Want to show up wearing old sweatpants and an eye patch? You're good.
What if they don't need an eye patch?
Literally doesn't matter.
We're more concerned about what God wants for you.
We do teaching from the Bible. It's in-depth, super practical, meaning
there's not even time to waste on what someone is wearing.
Seriously, come on out. Maybe you'll find someone to swap an eye patch with.
www.revo.church.
That's R-E-V-O.church.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
One of the things we find interesting is that humans have always believed in a God.
Even philosophers like Aristotle and Plato, who were ready to reject anything that wasn't logical, believed.
Author William Lane Craig has said, the ancient Greek philosophers were impressed with the order that pervades the cosmos, and many of them ascribed that order to the work of an intelligent mind who fashioned the universe.
He continues, the heavens in constant revolution across the sky were especially awesome to the ancients. Plato's Academy lavished extensive time and thought on the study of astronomy because Plato believed it was the science that would awaken man to his divine destiny.
Great point by Dr. Craig. In other words, the very fact that our universe is ordered instead of random and chaotic
should be a sign to us that some kind of ordered mind created the rules that govern the universe. It was not a random and chaotic accident.
Like it says in Romans 1:20.
Read more. Get Reasonable Faith by William Lane Craig.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Truth Revolution.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah.
We're with Dr. Sean McDowell. We've been talking about Christianity and what's been wrong with it, what's been good with it, and how can we tell the difference?
Okay, let's just get it out there. The Inquisition.
Uh-oh.
Was this real, and was it Christianity's fault? Hit me. What do you think?
Well, the Inquisition is a pretty sticky topic. Rodney Stark, a sociologist, has done some good historical work on this. And I think there's some area where the church has to blame, but it's not quite that simple. Number one, you got to understand the worldview of the people at that time. If they really thought that witches had the power to murder children, that worldview was wrong, but that informs the way they were thinking at that time. And it wasn't just the church that did it. It was also the larger society jumped in and participated in this. Now, should the church have not done it? Yeah, I'm not going to pretend the church didn't do it. So there is some blame to go around, but part of me says, you know, if we're going to beat up the church for the Inquisition, if you have to go back that far, you know, other religions, which I won't mention, have that kind of deep intolerance happening today worldwide. Maybe Christianity has come a long ways and learned from some of its mistakes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about, I'm going to skip over the wars question. We've dealt with that a lot on the show, but let's talk about the sexual sin. You know, the Catholic Church especially, but just churches in general have had a lot of publicity about sexual sin, pastors or youth leaders taking advantage of people. Is this a real thing or is this not a real thing?
Well, if it happens once, it's a real thing.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking to see some of the stories. And right now, with such political hysteria, there's even some stories of people that I know, I don't know if they're true or they're not true. You know, person implied this, person implied that. We're in such political hysteria that it makes it a little hard to separate fact from fiction. But my dad did send me an email that's really interesting. I'll take you back. You remember, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, Vice President Pence was just taken through the cleaners.
Yes.
Because of, you know, his position. I won't have dinner with a single woman. I won't email a woman. Everybody made fun of her.
Yeah.
The irony is, if all these people like Franken and Conyers had simply followed his advice, they still would be in a position of influence.
Yeah.
So I actually think a lot of this, while some Christians are failing to live up to this, I'm not going to pretend they're not, the secular left doesn't have the capacity to critique sexual abuse as even being wrong. They don't. In fact, just this past week, I mean, think about this, at Princeton University, they allowed a school-sponsored BDSM group. All right.
Wow.
Now, Princeton University had similar ones at Harvard and other schools. Now, just think about the irony of this.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm getting fired up thinking about this. That involves abuse, hurting people, mm-hmm. taking advantage of people. How can Princeton allow a club like that to go forward and then turn around and accuse some of these men for using their power over women? You can't have it both ways. So, yes, Christians have fallen short, and if they do, we should call them on it.
Mm-hmm.
But Christianity has the worldview power. We're made in the image of God. We're called to respect people, to even call this a sin. I don't know how our sexual culture, how our secular culture does this with any consistency.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I was even engaging with a discussion with one of my friends who's an atheist, and I asked him point blank, like, how can you actually call this? It wasn't sexual sin, it was something else, but how can you actually call this wrong or evil? And he basically had to admit at some point in the conversation, it finally came down to it, it's just my preference. I just don't think it should be that way. And this is the reality with the atheist worldview, that if you don't have a standard that's above yourself from a God, then you're just talking about preference. You're not talking about absolute right and wrong.
I think you're right. If there's not human dignity, if we're not made and designed to live a certain way, then you don't even have any basis for saying anything is wrong, let alone this kind of sexual abuse. Now, some people on the left freak out when you say that. Why? Because they're made in the image of God, mm-hmm. and we simply know that these things are wrong.
Yes.
So I'm not criticizing them for calling these things wrong. What I'm saying is their worldview lacks even the ability to call these things. Mm-hmm. So the topic of this program at the beginning is, what about the Inquisition and Crusades and all these things? Well, every bad thing the church has ever done assumes there's such a thing as bad.
Mm.
If there's bad, there must be good.
Right.
If there's good, there must be an objective moral standard. And if there's an objective moral standard, there must be an objective moral lawgiver. So ironically, the failures of the church, as much as we should grieve them and correct them, actually point towards the truth of theism and the failure of secularism.
That's right. That's so good, man. If you know that what they did was wrong, it proves that there really is a right and wrong. I love that. All right, we're going to pause for a second. We're going to answer Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Bible contradiction today. We kind of touched on it almost a little bit earlier.
Oh,
yeah. But check it out. Matthew 7:21 says, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven."
Okay.
However, Acts 2:21 says, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved.
So which one is it?
One or the other, right?
By the way, we found this Bible contradiction, mm-hmm. not on Freedom From Religious Foundation, not the Thinking Atheist.
Right.
This one was found
Pinterest, of all places.
On Pinterest. So they got a Jesus face palm there.
Yeah.
Saying, well, this is awkward. Well, which one is it? Is it not everyone who says Lord, Lord, or is it everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved?
Right.
All right, so we have a cracked acronym, C-R-A-C-K-E-D, mm-hmm. and the A stands for?
Author's intent.
Author's intent, right? Every time someone says something, you got to ask, what is this person intending to communicate? Not, what do I hear, but what are they intending to communicate towards me? And so when you read these, you know, in context, Jesus was talking about false prophets in Matthew 7. He was talking about false prophets who aren't really calling on his name. These are just people using and abusing his name. Mm-hmm. Right? That was his intention, to discuss people who are using and abusing his name. And in Acts 2, it's talking about people who genuinely want the Lord. And actually, listen to Jesus in context here. This is Matthew chapter 7.
All right, verse 15. Watch out for false prophets. They will come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves.
Okay, so that's the start of his conversation, mm-hmm. right? He's like, watch out for these dangerous people. And then you get down to verse 21, and then he says,
not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven.
Okay, so if you call the name of the Lord, will you be saved? Yeah. Unless you're one of these ferocious wolves who's only using the name of the Lord for your own purposes, for your selfish reasons. So this isn't a contradiction at all when you understand exactly what he was intending to communicate. Sean, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, that was a really good description. I think the only thing I would say, which I think you hit, is there's a difference in communication between the mere words and the intent behind the words.
Yes.
If somebody is going to pull up this supposed contradiction, they're not trying to understand what's meant in Acts. They're not trying to understand what Jesus taught in Matthew 7. Only somebody who's very unsympathetic, and has a bias against the scripture would find this objection and raise it. The intent is different. And I was actually a communication major, so we would study this stuff, the medium and the message. Words can mean very different things based on how and why and when you say them. That's communications 101. And like you said, the intent behind Matthew and Acts, what is spoken, is entirely different.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like at the beginning of the show when we said that Sean was from Biola, and I went, best ever. And Dave was like, oh, brother. Right. Yeah. His intent wasn't to actually put down Biola. No. His intent was just to have a little fun.
Right. Yeah. Comedic relief there.
Right. But, you know, 2000 years from now, when someone's studying our show, because it will definitely be in the archives of history.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to pull this out and say we contradicted each other. Mm. But that is not a Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
All right, with our time left, you made the point that first the Bible speaks of human nature as gloriously made in God's image but profoundly fallen. But then you've moved into this other point that a lot of people who claim to follow Jesus don't actually know Jesus. We discussed that. But then in your article, and I think this is so good, you say, yes, the church has done some bad things. This is undeniable. But the reality is that the good far outweighs the bad. And you actually give 10 positive things the church has done. So if you're going to look to the character of Christianity, you can't only look at the bad things it's done. You list in there like hospitals, and it began in the Middle Ages. What do you know about that?
So let me frame the way that you said this.
Sure.
Yes, the church and Christians have done bad things. That's only consistent with Christianity in the sense that we are deeply flawed and fallen.
Yeah.
But all the bad things Christians do violates the teachings of what Jesus told them to do.
Thank you. Yeah.
But the good things are consistent with what Jesus taught. What you see in the Bible, care for the widows, care for the orphans, help the poor, tell the truth. It's that ethic that has done more good for the world than any other ethic. Mm. So things like hospitals that you mentioned, why have a hospital? Well, you go back to ancient Rome, and if somebody was sick and they were a drudge on society, unless this person was at the very top of the food chain, so to speak, or if they had the wrong kid that they didn't want, they would just take human beings and they go put them out on the hillside to just die. It didn't matter if you got there. There's accounts in the first century of people getting the wrong gender of their baby, saying, well, just take it, put it on the hillside and, you know, let the dogs eat it kind of thing. Well, where did the idea come from that we should care for unwanted children, care for the unborn, care for the sick, care for the elderly, care for the widows?
Mm. That's a really good question. Yeah.
Made in the image of God. That's a Christian idea, Judeo-Christian idea.
Absolutely. Man, our time is just about up already. Okay, you got to get to SeanMcDowell.org.
Right.
You got to get the book, Evidence That Demands a Verdict. This is available on Amazon. Is that the best place for them to buy it?
Sure. If they come to SeanMcDowell.org, we can actually send them through our Biola library.
Oh, boy.
a signed copy.
Oh, a signed copy. Right on. There you go, listeners. Get a signed copy from Sean McDowell himself. Evidence That Demands a Verdict. Got to get this. Such a joy to have you today. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you on here.
Thanks for having me. You guys are a lot of fun.
All right. Now, before we go, just a reminder to everybody, we got Christmas Eve services coming up next week. We got four times to choose from. Dave, do you know them?
10 o'clock, 11:30. Those are a.m.
Yes.
Then 5:30 p.m. and 7 o'clock p.m.
All right. Dave knows them, right? He's old, but he knows them.
Nah.
And he's going to be
Get
there.
Off my lawn.
See you next week.